Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, as expected, the NCAA Women's Basketball National Championship game did outdraw the men's. It was 18.8 million viewers, 18.9, I should say, million viewers for South Carolina's win over Iowa on ABC Sunday afternoon. And the men's title game between UConn and Purdue was 14.8 million. So you're talking about a difference of 4 million viewers between the men's and women's title games. This is unprecedented. And also expected. I don't think anybody is surprised by this. It was pretty much guaranteed once Duke lost on the men's side and once we saw those numbers come in for LSU Iowa in the Elite Eight. This is the Sports Media Watch podcast. John Lewis, joined as always by Drew Lerner. If you have not already, please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So let's keep talking about this really unprecedented, circumstance that nobody would have ever predicted going into last season, certainly, and even this season. One of the things that's amazing about this number that came in on Sunday, 18.89 million viewers, is that it made last year's national title game number look bad. Like, you look back at last year and go, wait a second, 9.9 million, what was going on there? It's kind of incredible because this time last year, that number, 9.92 million, was incredible. I mean, it was shocking. And they doubled it this year. It's really not something that I would consider having a great precedent in all the years I've been following sports ratings. It's not like when Danica Patrick raced in the Indy 500 and they got this great big rating. They didn't come back the next year and double it. You know what I mean? Like, that, this is really beyond anybody's reasonable expectations. And Drew, I'll bring you in on that note.
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm trying to think, like, of other properties that have had a similar, growth pattern there, right? Or they're doubling year over year after a record high the previous year. The only thing I can think of recently is maybe F1, right? But that's because you're starting from such a small baseline audience. And growing, pretty inorganically through a Netflix show, right? This is a bit different, I think. This is a star player in Caitlin Clark coming around, like a once in a generation talent for the college game. And for some reason, she was able to, capture the imagination of the entire country and really lead to these gargantuan numbers.
Yeah, most watched basketball game in 5 years. You think about since COVID, March 11th, 2020, and all these years since, not a single men's basketball game has gotten to 18 million viewers. And if you had told me 2 years ago, well, in 2024, basketball will finally get back to like 19 million. You couldn't have in a million years sold me on the idea that it would be a women's tournament game. I would never have bought it. And, I'm not one of these people who says nobody watches women's sports. I mean, obviously, anyone who's read my stuff knows that I've always reported on women's sports, from the perspective of someone who does obviously respect that they do draw good audiences. And of course, I have a pretty broad definition of what a good audience is. To me, I was never going to sit down and pretend the numbers were incredible when they weren't. But realistically, in television, if you're getting 4 million viewers on ESPN, that's a pretty good night, right? Women's tournament has always done okay. And I would never have bought that this was in the realm of possibility. 19 million for a women's tournament game. I would have assumed some Nancy Tanya scandal type thing was going on because, you're telling me just on the basis of one player, you're getting from 5 and 6 million is good to 19 million in an era where the NBA hasn't gotten to 14 million for a game, since COVID, where the NCAA men's national title game can't get to 15 million in back-to-back years. That's really amazing.
It's telling that you know, this is a podcast that primarily talks about sports viewership, sports ratings. And I think the last four or five episodes now, the lead story has been women's college basketball. If you had told me when we started this a year ago that we'd be talking about this story for a month, I mean, that would be insane. But it is truly a huge anomaly. And what's interesting to me in reading some of your writing about Caitlin Clark and the women's college basketball viewership is not only the growth that we've seen in games that she has played, but growth for the property as a whole, specifically on days that she has not played. This is what's been brought up to me when someone comes and asks and says, well, what's going to happen next year, right? Like, this isn't sustainable for the women's game, right? Because, you know, there's a narrative out there among people that don't follow this type of stuff, thinking this is just a one-off and that the growth in the women's game, kind of similar to F1, like how I said, is inorganic. This is inorganic, but in a different way. I tell them to look at the numbers for the tournament on days where Caitlin Clark has not played. And the growth there is substantial as well.
Exactly. And it's not at the level of when Caitlin Clark does play. I mean, it's not. But we're not going back to 2022 even. The network windows are going to be better. So just to go off on a little tangent, and anyone who follows me on social media knows I was talking about this on Sunday. 3 o'clock is a ridiculous start time for a game that gets 19 million viewers. It goes along with ABC's insistence on never threatening to run over its, you know, terrible primetime lineup of AFV, American Idol, and I think they're still doing that 2020 thing, What Would You Do? They're still doing that. That aired on Sunday night. And this is apparently, at Disney, more sacrosanct than 60 Minutes is to CBS. And so they cannot risk any sports overrun. So the latest an NBA game can start is 3:30. But the interesting thing is, the latest a women's college basketball game could start is 4. They could easily start that game at 4 and be reasonably confident that they wouldn't bleed into prime time. They started at 3 because they have traditionally devalued women's college basketball and women's basketball generally, that they don't even want to risk the possibility of bleeding into world news. So it's like, make sure this ends in time for world news with whatever random person we have doing that on the weekends, right? And that's why that game starts at 3. Ridiculous. But, you know, that's kind of what we have with Disney and ABC.
I don't know how much viewership they're really leaving on the table by bumping it up an hour or 2 hours, right? Maybe you eke out another million or two, which, sure, that's significant.
Another
right?
million gets you to 20.
Yeah, fair. That's fair. But I mean, honestly, if you want to talk time slots, John, the Sunday at 3 has got to be way better than Monday at 9:20, which is what the men are doing. I know you're also going on tangents about that time slot on social media, understandably so. I mean, this is how it's been for a long time. I don't understand why people are still complaining about it either, but
I get why people are complaining about it. What I don't get is why they're always acting surprised. It's like, what? This game starts at 9:20 every year. Every year it does. If you want to say, I can't believe they still have a 9:20 start, that's different than saying 9:20. What? I can't believe it. Like, yeah, it's on at 9:20. It always is.
You take Sunday at 3 over Monday at 9:20, right?
You do. It's a better time slot, but you're leaving more on the table with 3 than you are at 9:20. Because realistically, the earliest the national title game of the men can start without negatively affecting the ratings is 9 flat. You want it to end after 11 because you want it to bleed into that local news time. And that's when a lot of primetime sports peak, is that 11 p.m. quarter hour. Obviously, it doesn't matter on cable. There's no local news on TBS. So that's one reason why they should do an earlier time slot, certainly. But in general, live sports viewership peaks in that 11 o'clock window. So the latest you can go, 9 o'clock flat. But that really should be fine, because this is an artifact of the days when, you know, CBS would have like Designing Women on at 8 and, you know, Hearts of Fire at 8:30. All right. And then they'd have the basketball. But just put a pregame show on, right? Because the way that they would do it is they would have the pregame show on at 9 and then the game on at 9:20. Do the pregame show at 8:30 and the game on at 9 flat. That's the easiest solution to that problem.
John, I want to kind of talk about the WNBA for a second here. Because, you know, with all this great ratings news coming out of women's college basketball, I couldn't help myself but think about why has the WNBA not been able to break through in any way, really. You know, no game over 1 million viewers since, I believe, 2008, which is something you cite on Sports Media Watch quite often. When you see an audience like 18.9 million that we saw on Sunday, it's hard to believe that not a single professional level game is able to get even 5% of that viewership. So if you're, you know, czar of women's basketball, right? If someone appointed you to that position, what are you doing to try to have the WNBA break through in a similar fashion?
Well, first of all, I can only imagine the reaction to a man being the czar of women's basketball. It would not be well received. But if I was in control, I mean, first of all, more games on broadcast television, which Kathy Engelbert has done. So the WNBA starts out with Val Ackerman. And Val Ackerman is a good, you know, very, very seasoned executive. Now with the Big East. They brought in Donna Arender from the PGA Tour, Laurel Richie, I believe, from the Girl Scouts, and Lisa Borders from Coca-Cola.
Wait, you're telling me that they hired a commissioner from the Girl Scouts of America to run the WNBA? Yeah. I don't want to sound offensive here. That's ridiculous, right? Did she have any sports background at all?
I don't think so. Well, the WNBA has not really been well run for most of its existence, right? Let's just be completely real about that. You know, one of the things that kind of bugs me about the WNBA is they like to refer to themselves as, we're a bold, progressive sports league. And it's like, you know, it sounds like they're talking about a beer. We're a bold Canadian lager, you know? But the WNBA has stood in its own way for most of its history, right? First of all, there was a women's league that existed already. It was called the ABL. Probably wasn't going to survive to now. Is there an alternate reality where the ABL is still around in 2024? Definitely not. Let's be real. But there was an existing women's league. The WNBA comes in with the backing of the NBA and kills it, right? Not immediately. They coexisted for a little bit, but it's not like they merged. It wasn't like the UFL and the XFL. But the WNBA, honestly, I don't really think has ever been serious about itself. I really don't. I mean, and you can kind of see from that little period between Val Ackerman and Kathy Engelbert. And nobody would ever hold the league's feet to its fire because, you know, now you have to be an ally, right? You know, we all got to be allies now, which usually doesn't actually help anybody's cause. And so the league kind of just was able to exist in this space where it didn't do anything, didn't grow, and made the wrong decisions. But they started to turn it around. I think Kathy Engelbert is a big part of that. And kind of getting back to the original point, getting more of those games on ABC, I think is a good place to start. That's what I think is the most important, more over-the-air exposure.
To me, I think a large part of it's the marketing. You know, I think basketball fans in general, they can actually rattle off a fair amount of WNBA players, knowing them from their college days, right? But for some reason, that transition from the college game to the professional game causes them to, you know, fall off the face of the earth for the casual sports fan. To me, I think that's a failure of marketing your star players. You can have all the broadcast windows you want, but if you're not excited to tune in to watch Breonna Stewart or Sabrina Ionescu or, you know, Caitlin Clark this summer, then that's a failure on the part of the league.
This is a league that has tried everything to market itself. It tried Keisha Panettiere leaning against a car in leather pants. Okay. And that was when they were genuinely trying to market the athletes in a stereotypic way to appeal to men, right? This is a different era I'm talking about. This is when you turn on your TV and there'd be a catfight commercial for Miller Lite where two women would be, you know, tearing at each other's clothes, saying great taste or less filling. You'd be turning on the TV, they'd be saying, I love football on TV, shots of Gina Lee hanging with my friends and twins. And I mean, I've mentioned that commercial on here before, but I remember every lyric of that. They used to do on SportsCenter a version of that song for each week of the NFL season. And they would have custom lyrics, okay? And this is a completely different world. And so the WNBA did try that, right? They did try to do that. I mean, I can even remember, you know, Sue Bird in like a basketball jersey as a dress lying in a bed. That happened. We can't pretend it didn't happen. That all happened. And that didn't work because guess what? That doesn't work, right? Tennis didn't benefit from Anna Kournikova. People don't watch sports for that reason. Then they tried to shame you. You don't watch us? Why don't you watch us? Why, you know, what I think it was like, have you seen her was one. Watch me work was another. Expect great was the worst one. I feel so bad for poor Cheryl Ford. They made Cheryl Ford the face of this awful ad campaign, right? And they tried that and it failed. Because of course it did. That's not, when has the WNBA ever tried an ad campaign that said, hey, Diana Taurasi is trying to win another title this year. Can she do it? You know, hey, you know, the LA Sparks last season, they lost in the conference finals on a tip-in by Sophia Young. Can they get their revenge? They never tried it. They never tried to just talk about what was going on in the game. They never tried it. And up to now, they still actually haven't tried doing that. You know, I don't watch MLS. But you know what I see in MLS ad? They're always talking as if I should know who the people are and what the stakes are. Like coming up next, you know, it's the LA El Trafico, the biggest rivalry. And it's like, I don't know who these people are. But that's kind of what you have to do. You have to market the game and the stakes. It's sports. And it's like year 27 for the WNBA. They've never done it. They're lucking into good fortune that they honestly don't really deserve. And that's what this is. Now, you know, if you view the WNBA as a great cause, a social cause, then this is wonderful. But if you view the WNBA as a sports league that has never really taken itself all that seriously and never really tried very hard to be successful, because it hasn't. Maybe it's changing now under Kathy Engelbert, but it has not tried hard to get where it is. Maybe Engelbert is the David Stern and everybody else before us, the Larry O'Brien, right? But, you know, this is a league that honestly, you get what you put in. Where the WNBA is today isn't because of a bunch of idiots on Twitter making nasty jokes. Where the WNBA is today is the product of a league that never really did anything. They just kind of sat back and said, well, media, you do our job for us.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if the league capitalizes this summer on their good fortune. But I think it's time to move on and talk about the men's national championship game. A pretty ho-hum number, maybe a little bit lower than I was personally expecting. The final viewership number was 14.82 million. That was across TBS, TNT, True TV. It was down 3% in the rating, up 1% in viewership versus last year, which was on CBS. So there's a bit of a discrepancy there, but last year's was 14.7. So all in all, pretty ho-hum number for men's college basketball.
Yeah, I mean, what do you really expect? UConn is, frankly, I mentioned before, UConn is the San Antonio Spurs of basketball, both on the men's and women's side, although certainly a more popular team on the women's side, relatively speaking. No one has ever been interested, I shouldn't say ever, maybe back in the days of Rip Hamilton, but certainly dating back to the Emeka Okafor era, people don't want to see UConn at this point of the tournament. They want to see all the other blue bloods. And UConn just inevitably, if they're in the final, it's not interesting. That was not an interesting game Monday night. They didn't have an interesting game against San Diego State. They didn't have an interesting game against Butler. That was dreadful, 53-41. They didn't have an interesting game against Georgia Tech in 2004. That was also dreadful. Now, 2014 against Kentucky was interesting because Kentucky was there. And so, you know, you beat a team like Kentucky because of the upset aspect. They were a low seed that year, too. That was the only time I think UConn's been a low seed in any of the times that they've won. So there was some interesting stuff there. The ratings for that were okay. But
do you think fans have long memories like that where they're kind of subconsciously thinking about, oh, you know, 2004 against Georgia Tech, UConn wasn't really that interesting then, or, you know, that game against Butler where both teams didn't even combine for 100 points. I don't know, like, maybe this is just me personally. I feel like maybe I just have a very fleeting and short memory about this stuff. I don't know if that's something I ever consider. I definitely consider the legacy of the team and that, you know, UConn obviously has a great history in the tournament, but I don't know if I'm thinking about previous championship games to formulate my opinion on this year's game.
Well, yeah, that's fair. But I do think that ultimately it's not a coincidence that whenever UConn is at this point, the game tends to not be very good. And it's a different squad every time, but, you know, programs take on personalities over the years. And UConn is by the numbers, by the book. They never have a true superstar. You know, I shouldn't say a true superstar, but they never have, you know, a Zion. They have people who maybe they go into the NBA and they're all right, but they're not exciting players. And yeah, this is kind of where you end up. And the other thing too, they don't play close games. At least give us a close game. You know, I mean, and they win comfortably. And it's always just competence. And you know what? Competence is nice. You want that stability and that competence, you know. But look, when it comes down to it, that's not what moves the needle. People want a little bit of excitement and drama. And I don't think that's a lot to ask either.
The uncompetitive nature of this game, I'm sure, definitely had an impact. I mean, just speaking personally, I was in bed by the under eight timeout in the second half. I knew there was no chance at a comeback.
I fell asleep, man. I did. I fell asleep at the start of the second half, and I actually woke up just in time for one shining moment. They got to have an earlier start. Let's just be real about it. Like I said, you want it to go into 11 o'clock, but you want it to be ending at 11 o'clock. You don't want there to be like 8 minutes left. And the NBA is going back with the same 8:30 starts of the finals this year. That's returning. National title game of college football, as someone pointed out to me yesterday on Twitter, that's been 7:30 the last couple of years. Hasn't really been publicized, but it's been a 7:30 Eastern start. That's early. First year, obviously not great because TCU got blown out. But last year, the ratings were fine. 7:30 start, it was fine. And I think you don't want it to be so early that you leave an hour of prime time with you know, unoccupied. But 9 o'clock flat, when I say 9 o'clock flat, I mean literally the tip-off is 9 o'clock. You have your pregame show, and as soon as 9 o'clock hits, that ball is in the air. The ball is tipped, right?
You almost think that's like an advertising thing where it's like, all right, well, what do you advertise if you're actually tipping off at nine? Because you want viewers to tune in before tip, that's right? Great. If you're advertising it that game starts at 9, people are going to tune in at 9. So you'd have to advertise what game starts at 8:30, and that doesn't really work.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that's why, right? I mean,
right. No, you're
you
right.
You want to give viewers time to actually find the game.
You're right. You're exactly right. I mean, and you can't say game starts at 8:55 or something. I mean, that'd be ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, if you start at 9:05, maybe that's enough. 9:05 tip, you know.
Well, they do a lot of like 6:09 in the Final Four, you know, like where, you know, you're going to just tune in at 6 if the tip off's at 6:09.
Exactly.
But that's not a huge difference between that, you know, 9:09 and 9:20 is not huge.
Exactly. What does it even, well, it's 15 minutes. It's not huge, but 15 minutes is 15 minutes. That's a full quarter hour. That's a full extra quarter hour. So maybe there's some value in that. The telecast began at 9:18, right? I mean, that's crazy. There's no need for that to be that late. If you start the telecast at 9:03, I think that'd make not a world of difference, but it won't hurt. I cannot see that hurting the ratings, and maybe people will be able to stay up a little bit longer. But more than anything, the game's got to be good.
Well, next year, they'll be back on broadcast, so, you know, barring any randomly generated matchup, you would hope to see an increase there. John, do you have anything else with college basketball before we move on to our final topic here?
I think it's been a great year, a great tournament across the board, including for the men. I think everyone was up. Everything was up. For the men, very slight increases. And by the way, the ratings were lower. The viewership was up. So that's a little bit of that out of home, I would expect. No complaints if you're CBS or Turner. This was a great March for college hoops, a great year for college hoops. And, you know, onward now. I mean, look, up is up. And for the women, obviously, this is a tremendous, tremendous success story. But for the men, okay, you lost to the women. Big deal, right? I'd rather lose to the women and be up than beat the women and be down 30%. I mean, people have this weird, and I know, look, people will say, well, didn't you highlight the fact that it beat the women, that the women beat the men? I did, because it's a historic thing. It's shocking. It's a stunning thing that's happened in the ratings. But there's no shame in losing to something that gets 19 million viewers. And again, people have this idea that, oh, wow, you lost to this thing? How embarrassing. Like, if your viewership is up, it's fine. Last year, not this past season, obviously, but the season before, when the NFL did the three Christmas games for the first time, the NBA's viewership on Christmas was up. It was a great thing for the NBA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just because you lose the head-to-head doesn't really mean anything. You want to be able to still build your audience. I mean, you want to be able to beat your competition. Don't get me wrong. And that does matter. But ultimately, as long as you're up, I think you can feel pretty satisfied.
Well, John, credit to you for saying this was a possibility before the tournament even began. You were out in front of that. So the decades of covering this industry have certainly paid off in that regard.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I might have been the first one to suggest that that was possible. And it played out exactly as I thought it would need to. The only difference is I thought the men's final would need to be a record low. But the men's final was up, and it's still, I mean, granted, pretty much at record low territory. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
like 1% from last year, but it was still up. And it was really just that the women did a lot better. I figured the men would have to fall for the women to beat them. The men were up, and the women still beat them comfortably. So really amazing run. And we won't see something like this for a while.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, just real quick before we move on to our final topic here, the way this penetrated the rest of the media world is pretty incredible. I mean, I was, you know, walking into the office this morning and I saw, you know, CNN's morning show. One of their lead stories was, you know, women's basketball championship beats men's in viewership. And it's like, you know, this is something not just us sports viewership geeks are talking about. This is something everyone is talking about.
And it is a little weird. I mean, it is just ratings. You know, we had the conversation, I guess it was actually one of the solo episodes I did in October about whether ratings matter. Every year in October, baseball fans will tell you ratings don't matter. People don't care about ratings. But people do care about ratings in some circumstances. I do think, I don't know. I feel like it doesn't do anyone a favor to mock the men's tournament for losing to the women, which I do think kind of happens. I think it devalues the accomplishment that has been made by the women, and it's also totally unnecessary. So I want to stress this again, just because of that. The men's tournament did fine. But, you know, I do think that beating the men's tournament, the reason it's meaningful is because for the longest time, people said that people don't watch this event. It doesn't matter. No one cares about it. And I'm sure that was very bothersome to a lot of people who did care about it. And so not only to increase the viewership the way that it's been increased, but to beat the much more popular tournament that has, for the longest time, been known exclusively the NCAA tournament. the Final Four, the national championship, not the men's, but the. And I don't necessarily even think that was such a terrible thing. I mean, the reality is, with the viewership gap that was there for a lot of years, it made sense, right? When you're talking about the Final Four, that's the Final Four you mean. But because of that comparison, because of that sense of mockery, really, right? It was a lot of mockery. Because of that, it's meaningful to have these numbers as they are. It is more than just a rating story. It's not revenge. I don't think it's like that, but it's basically saying you were wrong, right? You said all these years that no one would ever watch this, that this stuff didn't matter, that nobody cared. Well, I finally have data to show that you're wrong. And so even though it's really weird to see an athlete tweeting out television viewership like Caitlin Clark did yesterday, that's bizarre. And it's kind of to see TV analysts wearing shirts that reference in any way the viewership. That's bizarre. With all due respect to Andrea Carter and Shanae Abumake, that was, I would not have greenlit that if I was ESPN. I do understand where it's coming from, because again, even though the viewership for this tournament, the women's tournament, was always pretty decent, the argument was no one watches that. No one cares. This doesn't matter to anybody. And nobody likes to hear that the stuff that they like doesn't matter to anybody. Nobody likes to hear that. You know, I'd love to hear that everyone watched the Curb finale on Sunday. You want to feel like the stuff you like is stuff that everybody likes.
All right, John, let's move on to a piece of non-viewership news. Probably the biggest story to come out of last week in sports media, and that is Norby Williamson's departure from ESPN. I know you have some, you know, well-documented opinions on Norby Williamson's reign at ESPN. So, John, why now?
Good question. Everything that I've read indicates that Norby and Burke Magnus didn't see eye to eye. And it makes sense. Norby is very old-fashioned. He finally ran up against a culture that he could not beat back. You know, all that stuff from the John Skipper era. It wasn't really successful from a business standpoint. I don't really know that the market for, you know, left-leaning intellectual news on sports, I don't know that there's really that great of a market for it, with all due respect to Meadowlark Media. But that's kind of what he was doing, left-leaning intellectual sports talk, right? Grad student sports, right? I mean, nobody at ESPN was going to stand up to protect that. Norby, I will give Norby credit for one thing. Norby Williamson treated Pat McAfee exactly the same way he treated Jemele Hill, the way he treated Michelle Beadle. He wasn't selective. He simply could not stand anybody, no matter their race, color, creed, having a personality. He couldn't stand it. He could not abide it. This person has a personality? Get them out of here. Right? He could not abide it. And he was consistent on that front. It's ESPN's other executives that aren't being consistent, because when Norby went after Jemele Hill, they didn't care. When he went after Michelle Beadle, didn't care. But when he went after Pat McAfee, who is the future of ESPN, well, they cared then. And ultimately, that's why I think that's where, you know, maybe it's not just McAfee, but I think McAfee is symbolic, right? ESPN is going for a specific audience here. They're trying to get back that young male audience desperately. Whether it's with McAfee or it's with gambling or it's with any of these streaming platforms. And Norby is all about, well, let's just put another sports center on the main ESPN, and that'll fix everything. And obviously, that's just not the direction of the channel.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a school of thought where if you're ESPN and you're the destination for sports news coverage and sports entertainment coverage, you want to stay out of anything that can be coded as political.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for most of the 21st century, that's been a decent school of thought to come from. I think sports are generally seen as an escape for a lot of people, something to, you know, get their mind off the real world. So I think it's understandable why you want to run your business that way. But you are correct. In today's day and age, ESPN needs something different. They need personalities to drive their viewership. And, you know, their brand recognition is going to be centered around personalities more so than, you know, covering sports like a news channel, right? You know, my concern with ESPN, I'm not the only one that shares this concern, is if this is your new model, if you're putting all your eggs in the Pat McAfee, Stephen A. Smith, Greeny basket, you know, I think we're going to see in just over a year, Stephen A. Smith's going to have ESPN over a barrel. You know, they have all the leverage now. So if I'm ESPN, if I was the czar of ESPN, like if you were the czar of the WNBA, I think I'd be divesting in daytime studio programming, but that's just me.
Well, you know, I think ESPN's future is very much up in the air. And one thing we know for sure is that Norby Williamson's vision is the vision of 1997. It's not for the present day. And so wherever ESPN goes, whatever challenges that it faces, it's got to be another voice in there. And that's why I think the decision was made. And it doesn't, you know, it didn't hurt that Norby spent a lot of time creating enemies needlessly in Bristol and handling a lot of those controversies in a way that was seemingly designed to extract maximum humiliation out of the people he was going at. So, you know, there you go. As far as ESPN goes, who knows what the future holds? I mean, they have invested heavily in Stephen A. I suspect they'll hold on to him like he's an actual television property in terms of paying. And because he is a television property, he is. You know, he moves the needle, unfortunately, whatever he does. The numbers that they won't recover from losing him. So they have to hold on to Stephen A. And, you know, from there, who knows? Because eventually Stephen A is going to get tired of it. Just generally, he wants to do other stuff. ESPN will have to adjust around where the industry goes. And it might be the case that having daytime studio programming doesn't make sense anymore at a certain point. That might be the case. You know, maybe just have First Take and that's it. And First Take can be like, you know, one of those shows you just click on, when you open up the app. And it's not like a linear show. It just goes on whenever it's done and people watch it. I don't know. I mean, you know,
and pretty much any of their personality driven shows, or even like NFL Live, for instance, wouldn't they be better consumed in podcast form anyway? Yeah.
Well, that's how I'm watching PTI now, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I've watched PTI for years.
Yeah. And you know what I did the other day was I just read the transcript.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, just 2 minutes. Just breeze through, see what Tony and Mike said, and call it a day.
Certainly the end of an era when it comes to Norby Williamson's departure, and of course, very emblematic of where ESPN is in its current form. John, do you have anything else that you want to tack on to the end of this podcast?
No, not really. You know, it's been a long stretch of weeks here doing the tournaments. NBA is coming up. The Masters starts in a couple of days. That's another week down. Hope you all enjoyed the solar eclipse. We'll be back next week with more sports media talk.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.